I would like the ship to go. Now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussing Trek. We are here to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Is there any ugly? I don't know. Of the first two episodes of season 5 of Star Trek Discovery. And like always on this voyage, I have none other than Larry Irby. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing good, man. Glad you are here. Glad you are here. I can't wait to talk this out with you. I've heard that you have glowing reviews, so I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And also on the podcast, we have Cal Jones.
So, you know what? I'm doing well. You know what this really is? This is me cosplaying as Zora or a ship's computer, because looking at your video feed, and you can't see me, but you can hear me. You can just call me computer for the rest of this episode, and I'll answer to that. How about that?
We are, I don't think we can go on without first mentioning everybody in the chat. We have Wingrace, we have Mars, we have Brittany here to discuss this episode, but also we had a huge celestial event today with the solar eclipse. Now, if you were lucky enough to be in the path of it, which I was, I'm here in Dallas, the DFW area, Dallas-Fort Worth. Man, this is something that I kind of wanted to see, but honestly, I just wasn't just amped about seeing it, because we had an eclipse not too long ago, last October, I believe, which I really enjoyed. And you know, I had the glasses, I saw it, like, oh, this is a thing. But man, I believe this is my first time being able to witness a total eclipse. And man, it's almost a little bit, I won't say life-changing, but spiritual. It really had me for a little bit, man.
I took a picture. I don't know if you can see it.
I'll try not to stare into it.
So you're in the path of the full eclipse as well, Larry?
We did. It was very, very interesting.
Man, it's just like the perfect math problem where when two things align perfectly, I came away very much loving the experience, and I wasn't just too hyped on it going in, but I'm glad I took some time to experience it as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So all the people in the chat, did you see the eclipse? Did you experience the eclipse? Let us know your thoughts. But other than that, I don't really have anything else other than get right into these two episodes. Did you guys have anything you want to discuss before we dive in?
I wanted to say one thing. I just wanted to throw this out there as a tribute to my friend William, who we lost week before last. He's one of my best friends. We've been friends since 1987. He loved everything sci-fi. We bonded over Star Trek and Star Wars and went to many conventions together. And he passed unexpectedly. Clarence and Kyle both know about this. So I just wanted to send this kind of as a tribute to him, someone who was a true Star Trek fan and a very important person in my life.
Indeed, indeed. Condolences to his family, to William's family. Yeah, sorry to hear about that, man. And let's go ahead and I guess on a sad note there, let's go ahead and try to get into this episode.
Oh, he would love this.
Yeah, let us know what William would have thought of this, man. Let's get into the Red Directive, the premiere episode of season 5 of Star Trek Discovery. Captain Burnham and the crew of the USS Discovery are sent to retrieve a mysterious artifact hidden inside an 800-year-old Romulan vessel, but find that they're not the only ones on the hunt. Meanwhile, Saru is offered the position of a lifetime. Is it the position of a lifetime? I don't know. We'll talk about it. But let's go around the horn. I'm getting ahead of myself. It's been a while since we had a new episode to review. Cal, don't you want to give us a spoiler warning?
You know, I'm like sitting here in my virtual audio only world looking at you like, spoiler warning, spoiler warning. So for everyone listening, if you have not seen the first episode of Star Trek Discovery season 5, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Red alert.
All hands stand to battle station.
This is the right.
You cannot destroy an idea.
At ease before you spray.
No, let them swallow them all.
And the spoiler warning has been dropped, and we are back to review this episode. And like always, I don't know if he has anything prepared today, because I totally forgot about this part because we have not done it in so long with the new episode. But Cal Jones, do you have beats for the episode?
Yes, I do. Then my beats are as follows. It is the fifth, so the beginning of the end begins. I liked having two, but really would have rather have had one because I want more.
I think I'm right there with you, sir. I could have waited another week. But I see why they did it, because maybe the second episode wasn't as grand as the first one. But yeah, I see why they did it. But yeah, let's stretch this thing out, man. We only got but 10 left. Now 8 left. So yeah, to have two on the first night, I could definitely have waited another week. So let's go ahead and get high level views of the episode. And Larry, start us off. What is your high level view of The Red Directive?
Oh, my view is absolutely loved it, was into it from the very beginning. We all talked about the cold openings people do now, that people have been doing for probably the last 5 years or maybe more, where we start you out in the middle of the action and then we jump back and show you how we got here. And that it can be tropey.
Yeah.
Is that a word? Tropey.
Yeah, tropey. Tropey. Let's go with it.
But when it's done well, as it was here, it's beautiful. So I'm definitely high level, definitely.
Mm. Well, Larry's giving us a lot of glory here. Cal Jones, how do you look at this first episode of the two episode premiere?
So this is an episode that makes me very glad that I've done what I've done over the past 4 weeks, which is go back and watch all the previous seasons, because it didn't feel alien to me. It felt like I was just by extension picking up where I'd left off the weekend before. So that was a very good feeling. I think from a premiere point of view, it hit all the resonance that it needed to hit. It hit all the beats that it needed to hit. It set up a feeling of finality. And I would love to know how much of that was written prior to knowing that this was the last. If it wasn't, just by happenstance, it came across to me as a good opening ending, so to speak. What about you? What did you think?
Setting the table to take us off on this adventure to see where we're going to go this season, to figure out what this secret technology is. I thought it was a good primer for that. It definitely got me in the flow. It definitely, you know, we start, like Larry mentioned, we are starting off with action, action, action. And that's kind of the directive we've been hearing for the past, year of knowing this season is coming, is that it's going to be action packed. And there was definitely a lot of it in this episode, The Red Directive. But I like how we kind of took a beat after, you know, we got the ship surfing singing at the beginning. I like how we took a beat and was celebrating the Federation. And to me, as much as this season is going to be about action, this episode was about relationships. And we got a lot of relationship stuff at the very beginning. I'm going to throw it out to you guys. Take one. Any of the relationships at the very beginning of the episode when we were at this Federation celebration, whether it's Tilly's newfound love interest, whether it's Saru and Tarina, anything in here that kind of tickles your fancy and kind of has you amped for what we might be seeing going forward?
I was loving Tarina and Saru. They have just I hate to say, because God knows how old both of them are. I mean, she could easily be 150 or Saru, but it's so cute.
It is.
I just like the way it's just cute. It's adorable. Yeah. You know, and I'm just so here for it.
Yeah, man. Relationship goes right. Kyle,
Everything that Larry just said. I liked the energy. I like that it's a romance that is not of the caliber that you would see with Book and Burnham, because, you know, you're looking partly, let's call an apple or whatever a spade, let's just say you're looking at the two of them in part, putting them together for how they look physically. And with these characters, you're putting them together on an emotional level, and you're not focusing on their physicality. You know what I'm saying? You're not trying to market them for, oh, well, let's ship them. I like that. As for Tilly, I just love seeing Tilly back. She's a breath of fresh air. I love seeing how far that character has come in the course of these five seasons. And I love the innocence about Tilly's romance.
Yeah.
And I love the genuineness about the other's romance.
Yeah, the Tilly romance, it certainly was interesting because as much as we've seen Tilly grow over all these years, seeing her in the moment with a coworker at the academy, seeing how she was trying to navigate that was very childlike in a lot of ways, but it was also fun and interesting because Tilly is kind of the awkward character for us, and seeing her put in that situation I thought was a lot of fun. But for all the awkwardness of that situation, I feel like the Saru-Tarina relationship is, I said relationship goes earlier, but how they're able to navigate that with their positions, with their roles, and seem to do it very well. And they have a certain level of understanding I thought was really, really interesting among the two. Especially when you compare that to Book and Burnham in the last season. Well, all of Burnham's relationships, quite frankly. But yeah, I love the way their relationship is playing out.
You know what's so funny about it is the way Tarina looks at Saru. That is the Vulcan equivalent of your girlfriend jumping around your neck and like about to break your neck. But from a Vulcan standpoint,
what Spock said, why are you so excited? He's very angry right now. He's just sitting all calm. Okay. All right. But yeah, I do get that from the Vulcan point of view. Yeah.
Wingrace brings up an interesting point in the chat. He says, so was he a backdoor introduction to a new character for the Academy?
Maybe. I think if we get more of him this season, I would say definitely, which I think we are going to get more of him. You know, for me, I just like seeing the Academy bits that we did see, even when it was an offhanded mention of Tilly and her students, or, you know, we got the view of her quarters, or was it his quarters there at Starfleet Academy? You know, all of that stuff, I think, is definitely leaning toward, you know, what we may see in the Academy show. What do you guys think? You think we're going to see Tilly in the Academy show? You think that's a given?
Oh, absolutely.
Hmm.
It's going to be in the 32nd century. I have no doubt. I don't know how big of a role she may play in it.
Yeah.
I told you guys this before. I say that because, Clarence, I know you was probably a little kid, but I swear to you, they have been pitching this Academy story. Literally, I'm not even kidding, since 1984.
Wow.
They were talking about it way back then. Something had happened. They said, well, what if we don't recast? What if we do a new movie and recast young actors? And it's come up over the years. Every time they don't know what they're going to do with Star Trek. Hey, what about an Academy show?
And right before they did Enterprise, that resurfaced again before going the route of Enterprise.
Yep.
I think there was talk at one point before he ascended, if you want to call it that, of spinning off Wesley Crusher into an Academy type
there was.
Series.
That's very true.
Marge mentioning that she is glad that we got the Saru-Tarina stuff off the bat. I am glad. I'm glad of that too. And just on the whole, I'm glad that we didn't really start this season, you know, beating on the mystery box. Like we're not depending on that to drive the season. And that seems interesting to me. You know, we're not trying to leave this mystery 8 episodes out to make the show interesting. No, we're going to tell you what's going on, and hopefully you'll stay on for the ride. It's kind of what I'm getting so far.
Yeah. Literally, they opened the mystery box. In this episode or the next.
And Marge is also saying that, or asking, did we get the guy's name, Tilly's love interest? I don't remember it. I didn't write it down. So maybe.
It's probably on IMDb.
Or if it's on the credits. But I don't think they said his name.
Yeah. A few other tidbits from that Federation celebration gathering there. The 21-61 drink I thought was really cool. We get Stamets kind of in a weird place. We hear that the Spore Drive program has been shattered, and there is a new Pathway Drive, which it seems like the Discovery has now. And he's kind of, we see him kind of going through what is his position in the world. How will he be a great scientist or be known as a great scientist? Because the thing that he backed and, you know, even his whole reason for being on the Discovery in the first place was a Spore Drive. To see that shattered, I thought was interesting. But this new Pathway Drive, I want more details on that, because that's a tricky thing to me. I want to see how this thing works, because it seems it still works the same way, right? We're still seeing the ship jump around like it did in the Spore era. So what's the difference? I don't know.
And so I'm curious if this thing of him not knowing what he's going to do, does that give a hint that he's going to discover something that will be key to resolution that he will be known for by the end of this season? Oh,
look at you, Kyle, looking ahead. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, why bring it up? So
yes.
Yeah, a lot of table setting here early on. And I love how we get mention of some of the enemies of the races that I hope we see this season. We got mention of the Tholian Republic and the Breen Imperium. I hope that comes up again. But they threw some names out of some different races. I'm like, that might be interesting if we explore that a little bit more. So Burnham is there, and she gets word that she's wanted. Vance comes and tells her that she's wanted. And we see where she goes to this infinity room for this conversation. And that's how we get into the whole pursuit of the Red Directive. Now, I'm asking everybody in the chat, because I'm a little confused on this. I think I know what it is, but I come away from the episode titled The Red Directive, and for as much information as they've given us, I don't know if I'm sure what the Red Directive is. So do you guys know, or does anybody in the chat know, what is the Red Directive?
Drop everything you're doing, get here, and do it, period. Remember, and you probably won't know why you're doing it.
Yeah, and the other captain, remember, they're at talking to him, and he said, how many Red Directives have you had? I've had 6.
Raynor, yeah.
Raynor, love him. Been a fan since Battlestar Galactica, the reimagining. That guy is the perfect actor for that role.
So did you guys tell me what the Red Directive is?
Is basically like Black Ops, top secret, top of the food chain. There's nothing higher. The change is whatever the mission is, but it's a Red Directive, meaning it's the priority of priority, like Omega.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. And Wingray saying it seems to allow to shoot and kill. It does seem like it supersedes everything else. Marge is saying it's classified top priority mission. That does make some sense, because maybe we don't have Section 31 in this future. So it's up to Starfleet.
Oh, I bet you do.
Oh, okay. All right. That's interesting.
Bet you do.
So a quick online look says the Red Directive is a term used in the 32nd century Starfleet for missions of utmost urgency and sensitivity. These missions are so secretive that they can even supersede the authority of Starfleet's commander in chief.
Dang. Okay. That's a little, vague. Okay. I get it. Stuff is going down. We need to get there pronto and figure it out, is kind of what I'm getting. Back to Raynor. I didn't think I was going to like this guy. I really did not think I was going to like him, but he's kind of my favorite thing about the show right now. He reminds me a lot with his quippiness. He reminds me a lot of Richard Dean Anderson's Jack O'Neill.
Yes.
From Stargate.
I see that. I can see that.
Because, you know, he's just butting in with a quick quip, you know, the quick joke, and I love this dude, man.
Okay, you're giving high praise there, sir. Talk about me, you're giving high praise. Jack O'Neill, sir. It's a hallowed name.
But look at what they're doing, though, from the bigger picture. If you, you know, not taking anything away from him, but if you kind of go back out and look at it from the big picture, in season one, we have her being Burnham, having committed an act that has put her career in jeopardy. And she regardless of what the reasons were of why she was given her second chance, is given a second chance. Then you come back to season five and you present us with this character, Rainer, who is now in the same position she was, and she's the one giving the second chance. That bookend-wise, love it.
Yeah, I definitely saw that parallel. Let's get a little bit into Under the Twin Moons, but yes, I love that parallel. Also, you have that same parallel with Book's redemption.
True.
Although we're probably not going to see, we didn't see as much of that played out on screen, but he definitely has a similar arc of doing something pretty, you know, bad. Not that terrible, but bad, and now he's back in good graces.
Well, now we got to talk about the main thing we learned though in this one. The main thing.
What's that, man? Let's hear it.
Progenitors.
Okay, but before we get there, since you mentioned Book, Clarence, I want to ask you. We've had a conversation in one of our previous weeks about you kind of falling off the Book wagon, especially last season. You know, you liked him in season three, but you kind of ran his course a little bit and almost to the point of irritation with him last season. How are you feeling in his reintroduction? Do you still, you're back on board?
Man, I am 100% back on board, man. David Ajano is awesome. What's that Usher song that's out right now? We're not good, good, but we're still good. That's the vibes I'm getting, because man, just to see Book and Burnham, these are old friends and lovers, but friends, and to see them after something that broke them apart come back together and closure. They got closure on their relationship, and they're at a place now where they're still good. They can be friends. Book is still a valuable asset to the crew. But what I hope, and even Vance says, you know, I'm glad Book is there. But what I hope that means is that we can see Burnham not burdened by the relationship part of it. You know, he's my friend. He's a value asset to the crew. But, you know, I can make the tough decisions without being too burdened by having, you know, Book along. So, yeah, I'm loving the place they're in now. What about you, Larry? Do you like the place they're in right now?
I do. I like the fact that we get it in our heads that characters, because it's all written, it's all planned, but we get it in our head that these two characters have to be together. They have to be together. But that's not real life sometimes. And I think it's very brave of them to basically say, look, he did some stuff, and basically you hurt me. You know, you broke a trust. Okay, I'm good with it. I forgive you, and I understand your reasons. But it doesn't mean we can be like it was before.
Yep.
But we can move forward. Very good stuff. Very good writing.
Life lessons, man. Life lessons. I want to hit When Grace Has Come in here real quick. The problem I have with Book is that they gave him too many story connected reasons to come back. Although one isn't until episode two, it's like they really wanted to make us feel like he was needed. Yeah. Let me just say this. There's a few things in these first two episodes that feel a little shoehorned to me, but you know, I was okay with it, because to me, the carriers are like, I don't know what we can equate it to here, but to me, it's like a small network of people. I mean, of course there's a lot of them, but there's a small group or a very specific group of people who work in this network, and they all know each other. So without spoiling the next episode, which we'll get to. But yeah, I didn't hate that decision to have that connection there too much, but it was on the nose, as a lot of things are in Discovery sometimes. So we're going to get into the progenitors, Larry, but first I want to talk about Locke and Maul, our Bunny and Clyde for Star Trek. How do we feel about this duo? And it seems like a relationship that's a very loving one, but and I don't even necessarily feel like they're up to no good. Maul made a statement that there's nothing that says this tech is off limits. It's Romulan. So, you know, if we can get to it first, it's ours. So don't even, you know, don't need to come to us like that. But how are we feeling about Maul and Locke in this episode?
Isn't it refreshing that you don't have a diabolical, maniacal, bad shoehorned villain that I've been complaining about for season three and season four? You know, like you just said, with the two of them, Maul and Locke, they're just there doing what they do, scavenging. Yep. And it didn't, they weren't looking for the secret of the universe or whatever the case was. They were just scavenging and they found what they found, which just so happened to be the secret of the universe. But you get, but you get my point. You know, they weren't this, you know, mustache twirling, cackling villain that we've kind of had these last two seasons. I actually liked them. Yes. Whereas with the guy from last season, I couldn't stand him. So I just thought they were in the wrong place at the right time, or the right place at the wrong time, whichever way you want to look at it.
What do you think, Larry?
I love Maul and Locke. Number one, I love the makeup on Locke.
Yeah,
it's really good. And well, I love the fact that, because we first see him, we think he's somebody we've seen before, but then they tell you, you know, we don't know what species he is. And I love her look. They just, number one, I love that actress. I'm very fond of her work.
Seen her in Harlow?
Yeah, I've seen her in a lot of stuff, even bit roles. Like she was on Navy SEALs, you know, SEAL teams and things like that. But I love the fact what Kyle just said. They are just doing their thing. They just happened upon this. They weren't looking for this great universal power, as Kyle said. They just were doing their thing, and they ran across this thing. Okay. It's like, go.
Okay. Yeah. And let me add this real quick, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, sir.
The fact that we don't know what he is, and the fact that his face looks anamorphic a little bit, again, trying to figure out the end before we get started on the beginning, I am saying it now, I bet that's going to play into something. Is he one of these progenitors, or will he turn into be something? I don't know, but I just find that very interesting that they say that we don't know what he is.
I hope not. I would rather them just, I don't want to, because it's already, we're not talking about it yet, but there's already one that I'm going to complain about. It's, I'm with Wynn Grace on this, and this is really my only complaint about it, but we'll get to that later when we get to it.
Hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about the pursuit of the Red Directive and hunting down Locke and Maul. It brings us to Fred.
Fred was the bomb.
Oh man, this is something I never expected to see. We see a next generation era synth. Data was the only one at the time. So when did Fred get created? They did mention that Adam Song, which was in Picard season one, actually created Fred, patterned after Noonien Song. So what did we think about Fred, this relic of the past, and a very direct nod to the next generation?
Oh, really, really quick. I've got to say this. When they said Fred, I started laughing and grinning from ear to ear because I said, oh, Kyle can make a pun. This is so awesome. Because I was sitting here thinking, oh, well, they're about to do a Doctor Who crossover because we're about to see Romana.
What?
Because when the fourth doctor first met Romana, she said her name, which was this big long name, and he said, oh, I'll call you Fred.
Oh Lord. So the doctor's long history of calling people out of their name.
Yes indeed.
Strikes again.
And then she agreed to Romana, and then there you go. The history is as it was. But yes, Fred.
Any other thoughts? I thought Fred was amazing. What really kind of not made me mad, but like, oh man, Fred met his demise. When I thought Fred was a cool character we'd see again. And again, like just so direct in basically we're going to make this dude up exactly like Brent Spiner would have been made up back in the day. And to me, they even did a better job with the makeup on him than they did when they tried to recreate Brent Spiner's Data in season one of Picard. Because the makeup in that season was off.
Yeah, but don't forget, they did an amazing job on some of Data's children. Because remember how you had some of them look completely human? And remember the one who kind of turned out to be the baddie of Picard season, the first season, and yep. they did her. Remember, she, they same actress, but they did her in full on Data makeup.
Yeah,
but yeah, I will tell y'all, just so y'all know, from Beta canon, okay, the term "scent" is a slur.
Really?
Yep.
Hmm.
That's in one of the books that we were talking about the other day in the little Star Trek book club I'm in. And it's in one of the books, I forget, was it David? What, but it's one of the books that came out recently that the word "scent" to them is like a slur.
And you mentioned Data. Think also, we're judging how Data looked in season one of Picard based on our own memories of how he looked as a younger man playing as being Brent Spiner. So yeah. some of that, you know, is our perception filter, I think.
Yeah, I think what I love about Fred, he's just like a procurer of old things. You know, they dropped the isolinear chip, the stem bolts, the pad down. And I just thought that was real funny to have all those call outs of the past kind of dropped in his lap. I thought that was really cool.
Here's my complaint. I take it back. I have two. This is my one for Red Angel complaint. I did not like how Fred was taken out so easily. You have seen how fast Data can move. You have seen how fast, and he apparently had all those skills. You see how fast he was flipping through that book, and his positronic neck does how many trillion calculations? He would have known they were going to double cross him.
Fred did seem kind of skittish, though. I will say that. And especially when you look at the episode, this is connected to the chase where you have Data basically taking out a Klingon in that little game they were playing so easily. Yeah, Fred maybe should have been a little bit more powerful than what he was. But Fred was skittish. Fred was trying to get up out of jail. He had people around him to take care of the, you know, the mess. So I thought that was all good fun. And moving right along, this as we get this Fred's, we tap into his system, we get to read some of the book that we weren't able to actually get access to through Fred. Thank you, Fred. And it takes us to yet another planet, Kumal. Let me ask you guys about the trinkets of the mystery. And also at this time, we have Tilly hacking into the Federation database, getting the details of what's actually going on. So let's just throw it all out here. We finally know what's going on. This is connected to the progenitors, the chase, the episode where Picard's professor, what was the professor's name?
Galen.
Yeah, Professor Galen comes and wants Picard to leave his post to go on this journey for him to find the greatest thing in the universe. Kind of what we're doing now, right? To me, this whole season might just be a stretched out version of the chase. Let me just say that right now. But it's tying directly into that episode. And what are you guys' thoughts? We kind of end that episode with the different races being brought together because we all have a shared kindred. We're descendants of the progenitors. And I don't think it was picked up anymore in the show, but that's kind of where it was left at. But we found out one of the Romulan professors was continuing to find some of this technology connected to the progenitors. Thoughts on this, Larry? I know you have big thoughts about it.
Okay. Number one, it's one of my favorite Next Generation episodes. I always treasured. I watched it today as far as the clips of when Picard and the Romulan commander have that little conversation at the end. And he says, one day, one day. And of course, we see now all those years later, Romulans and Vulcans live in harmony.
Yeah, a bit of diplomacy.
Came out of my mind.
Navarre.
And, you know, that the episode was so good about where we all came from and things of that nature. And this is one of those. This is why I love this. This is one of those that we always talk about as Star Trek fans. We're always moping about, well, I wish they would do something else with that storyline. Yeah. Okay, they are.
They are, yeah.
You're welcome.
Yes, interesting. Now, I read that the progenitors also have ties to the Star Trek game Hidden Evil, which I did play like 20 years ago, and I don't remember the storyline. But I think they were in that game as well. As,
oh,
as
we
also I read.
We had them on. We already have had stories with the progenitors in Star Trek Online. Mm. A whole story, like some years and years ago, probably like maybe 8-9 years ago, where you get to meet them, and there's some now in the game. There's some of them still alive in hibernation in these places and have been in there, I guess, because I guess they didn't all die out like millions of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And your job in as a character in the game, you have to go find them, and it leads you to them.
Mm, that's cool. That's cool.
Now, this is a thought. It is not a negative toward the chase. It's not a negative toward the characters in general. But if I'm looking at it on the bigger whole, I couldn't help but think, well, here's once again, we're looking back at classic Star Trek that we know. You know, we're looking at references to things that have come before. And if you've gone 900 and something years into the future, why aren't we looking 500 years? You know, of course, we're not referencing that because that doesn't mean anything to the audience. But, you know, whenever I saw that clip of Picard, I'm like, eh.
Yeah, I'm here for it, man. I totally get what you're saying, but I'm here for it. It is a trick we know. I mean, we don't know about those 500 years in between. So you gotta connect to something that's relevant to what we already know.
True. And I'm not saying I dislike it. I'm just saying for argument's sake and for the sake of presenting all different points of views, I just wanted to throw that out there. I love the episode. Don't get me wrong.
What we've been saying, you and I both, that Star Trek needs to move forward because every show we've got right now is basically a spinoff directly of, you know, Discovery is a spinoff, Strange New Worlds of the original, Picard's a spinoff of The Next Generation. Lower Decks is a spinoff of pretty much everything. And of course, Prodigy is a spinoff of Voyager. But I get what you're saying. But I still love this.
Agreed. I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree. So let's try to wrap up this episode. We know the progenitors or the progenitor tech is kind of the focus of the season, going to track it down. I'm sure they might be throwing us off course a little bit. There may be a lot more to what's going on because that seems like a very simple premise, and they did give it to us in the first episode. So they may be going in a totally different direction, but kind of sending us this way to get started. So wherever it goes, I'm ready for it. And I want to mention real quick, Subspace Chatter mentions that Tilly's love interest is Lieutenant Jax. Thank you for that.
Very cool.
And thanks for being in the chat. But we eventually make it to Kamal. And if I have anything to complain about the episode, it may be this scene. Because I know, of course, this is what they were going for. We had the ship surfing at the beginning. And this is the other big set piece where we're going to have action, action, action. And they're on these speeders or whatever you want to call it. I know that's a Star Wars reference, but they're chasing after Locke and Maul's ship in these motorcycle things. And you know what? I liked it, but two things. I feel like it stretched out too long, and I feel like there was too much dialogue about what was going on from Burnham. And that's the thing they do from time to time. They have Burnham just talking way more than she probably should. They should probably go to another character to get some of that information. But instead, they have her give these long-winded kind of techno-babble or techno-babble in a sense of to kind of tell us what's going on. So I didn't really like that. But the action piece itself, seeing this avalanche and talk about scenes that I've never seen before, is seeing these two ships protect this town from the effects of this avalanche. I thought that was just completely amazing. And I can't imagine anything like that. So kudos to the showrunners. What did you guys think of this scene on Kamal?
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the action. It was kind of like a Indiana Jones-esque type thing, but in space. I mean, I love the fact that they did the thing with the ships. I just thought that was so very cool, you know? So yeah, I was there for, I didn't really have a problem with it. I do agree with you. Y'all doing an awful lot of talking to be trying to get away and not die.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't have anything to add. I just say I agree with both of you on both points.
Yeah, sometimes silence is a little bit more. So let me pick up a few comments and we'll go on to the next episode unless you guys have anything else from this one. But let me pick up a few comments real quick. Winker is saying maybe they could have added a little something like after Picard found them, Dr. Starza studied them for 40 years, but the trail went cold to event the history a bit. Are you saying, I'm not quite sure what you're saying at the very end, but I get your overall point. Yeah, they could have laid the breadcrumbs probably just a little bit better. And Marge saying that they tend to talk out their problem solving. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I noticed that in this episode and again in Under the Twin Moon. So that's just something Discovery does. I guess I'm used to it, but it's been so long since we've had this show on air. Maybe I kind of forgot about it. But yeah, I will give an honorable mention before we leave and go to the next episode. I will say there was one part where Burnham had her phaser pistol and she did something in like under a split second where it turned into a phaser rifle. I thought, oh, that was cool. So as far as visuals, they had a bunch of great visuals in this freaking episode.
See the matter. See, that works, man.
Yeah, they used it, the programmable matter to good effect.
Programmable matter, man.
All right. Hey, if they do stuff like that, I'm totally down for it, man.
But my only problem with that whole scene was I would have had the rifle from the start.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. So Space Chatter saying we see Dr. Valak's corpse. Yeah, we did. We did on the Romulan ship. Yeah.
He was dead. Shut up, Larry. For a long time.
All right, let's go ahead and get a rating to this one before we move on to Under the Twin Moons. I'm going to give this one a 5. I'm going to give it 5 pistols turned to phaser rifles out of 5. Larry, you giving this one a 5 as well?
I'm giving it 5 Saru getting married.
Bring out the jagged edge.
All right, I'm giving it 5 returning grudges out of 5.
Ooh, yeah. She's a queen.
Indeed.
But that's it, guys. We're going to end here. We got a 4.25 from Wingrace as well. But yeah, we're going to end here, guys. Thank you for joining. It's been a lot of fun. And until next time, guys, live long and prosper. Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Can I say that, like, shut up, Wesley? I can just go, shut up, Clarence?